where the fastest rising cancer rates are actually millennials and young people. And depending on their family history, they may not have access to cancer screening, depending also on their age.
Mia, I don't think anyone questions the value of the work and the importance of it, because to your point, those are significant statistics. Was it 43% of Canadians will be diagnosed? I mean, that's even higher than I thought, because I thought it was one in three, more or less, and that's even higher. So what can people do to help?
I think one of the challenges we have specifically in cancer sometimes is helping people understand that there has been real progress against cancer, and it's not a death sentence. Diagnosis can be very scary. Treatment can be very difficult. We're working hard and working fast to take a lot of that fear out of a diagnosis.
Mia, thank you very much for joining me this morning on the show. I was really looking forward to having you here.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Mia, what I like to start with normally is a little bit about your background and even as like a little bit about the upbringing, et cetera, because people get to see you in the out and about and events, et cetera. And then for many of them, it's like, well, what's Mia's story? Like, you know, did she grow up in Toronto? Did she grow up somewhere else? What does that look like?
Sure. Thanks so much for asking. I was born in Winnipeg, actually. I came to Toronto in the late 1990s after grad school. I spent part of my childhood actually in the States, in Colorado, because my mom was going to school there. And she took me and my brother to Colorado, and my father actually stayed back in Winnipeg. So they had a long distance marriage for a number of years, which we just accepted as normal, but at the time wasn't actually very common, perhaps still isn't too common. But I grew up kind of going on planes and going between two countries. And my parents just celebrated 55 years of marriage. My father's a Japanese Canadian, so I'm Japanese by background. And he was actually born in one of the internment camps set up during World War II when Japanese Canadians were interned. So I'm a proud Japanese Canadian, and my mother happens to be a Scottish Canadian.
No, and Mia, that's fascinating. And it's always to the point that I was making earlier is we meet people and it's like, I wonder sort of the and that's a very interesting story. And then, Mia, you've had a very interesting career path. And I know some of the listeners, especially some of the ones that are a bit more junior in their career, may be thinking, how do I become Mia one day? How do I run a foundation that does such fascinating work?
Thanks for that question. I lead the Princess Margaret Cancer Foundation now, which is Canada's largest cancer charity. And it's really just an honor to be able to raise money for the set of 200 different genetic diseases we call cancer, and which unfortunately is Canada's leading cause of death. But really to be able to be around patients and their families during a time in their life where they often feel very vulnerable and very scared about their future. But I've worked in a lot of different sectors over the course of my career, from independent consulting to management consulting at the Big Four, to the tier one banks, to startup. And I've been fortunate to just work with wonderful teams, wonderful volunteers on many boards, and really wonderful, now in my case, donors and supporters, but also customers and clients. It's really been an experience I could not have predicted, but one that I feel very, very fortunate to have had.
And Mia, I can completely appreciate that. And it's a fascinating background, but it is. And certainly I'll ask you a little bit more about your work. It's one of the things that people are always curious about is like, you know, career paths, because on this show, we've had people that have started with one training, you know, in this particular area of academics that has nothing to do with the job they end up having or have pivoted multiple times during their lives. And that's always interesting for listeners.
Yeah, I can totally relate. I did a PhD in media studies and communications, and I did that at McGill in the late 90s, and many of my peers at the time went into the academic world. That was something I was actually very interested in. I loved reading and doing research and studying problems, but I had student loans to pay and industry called. So off I went to industry and never looked back, but I just consider myself fortunate that I was able to meet so many different people and get into many different things, but my background is actually quite different from what I'm doing today. I think probably the thread that's run through my career is I've always loved really hard, challenging problems. And maybe because of my background, and I come from a family that dealt with very difficult circumstances, both maybe racially and also economically. My grandparents on both sides were very, very poor. And my parents were the first in their families to go to university. So we had come from hardship. And so I just loved really challenging problems. And as we know, the world has no shortage of them. Call me a little bit maybe crazy, but I just ran after hard problems and was fortunate to find great groups of people who were interested in solving them with me.
When I tell you, trying to solve cancer is certainly not a small challenge. Everyone will believe you when you say that.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. There's been some really bright lights in cancer, though. 20 years ago, survival rates in cancer in Canada sat around 50%, 50, and today we're up to 63%. So we really have an opportunity now to close the gap in Canada over the next 10 years by doing things like catching cancer much earlier through simple blood tests. That's technology. Our scientists have been fortunate to pioneer at the Princess Margaret, and there's new therapies available that harness the power of the body's immune system. So our goal really is to make sure that no one ever has to fear the words, "you have cancer." And we think that's within our grasp at the Princess Margaret. And of course, the research we do impacts standards of cancer care around the country and around the world. And we really feel that taking the fear out of a cancer diagnosis is doable and should be Canada's gift to all the entire world, and really at the Princess Margaret, our gift to all Canadians.
And Mio, I will ask you some leadership questions afterwards, because I think when you are an executive leader, whether not-for-profit or for-profit, the challenges are very similar and sometimes even larger in the not-for-profit world, because the budgets tend to have constraints that are even tighter than they may be in certain contexts. But I want to speak a little bit more, just because we started touching on it, on around the work of the Princess Margaret Foundation. And it is, I've had the opportunity to have exposure to it in a way that a lot of people may not, just through some of the work with lawsuits, which is, for anyone listening to it for the first time, it is essentially a not-for-profit really focused on getting lawyers to fundraise for cancer, and Princess Margaret Foundation being the beneficiary. So Mio, on that front, because I know the work being done is truly groundbreaking at a global scale, and we have some researchers that are some of the best in the world, what do you see sort of in the next 5 years as certain things that are within reach and achievable, that people may not even be aware of that's coming?
Well, Gary, first I want to thank you and the legal community for your support on lawsuits. It's so important to support cancer research, and we have some of the best in the world in Canada, as you mentioned, at the Princess Margaret. And I'm excited about what's happening in cancer over the next 5 years. And I think we're going to see developments really in three areas. So one, we're going to see cancer caught much earlier. We really have population-based screening for just four types of cancers: breast, colon, colorectal, and prostate. And if you're lucky enough to have a GP or access to a dermatologist, you may get an annual skin cancer check. But there's over 200 different types of cancers. And so we need to start being able to screen for those much earlier, in the same way we can screen for elevated glucose to catch diabetes earlier, cholesterol to catch heart disease earlier. And that's the future in the next 5 to 10 years in cancer. So that's one area. Second area is in new therapies. There's constant research being done on new drugs, harnessing the power of the immune system, new surgical techniques, which are less invasive and require shorter recovery times. And finally, the third area is, I think we're going to see a real push in cancer mental health. 43% of Canadians will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. People dealing with cancer have much higher rates, unfortunately, of anxiety, depression, and suicide, as do many of their caregivers. And we actually need to have a conversation about cancer mental health. We also know that for people who struggle with mental health issues and who are diagnosed with cancer, that their mental health condition can be worsened through a cancer diagnosis, as well as their cancer outcomes can be poorer. So we talk about much more comprehensive cancer support at the Princess Margaret, and I think that's really our opportunity in the future in the next 5 to 10 years.
And Mia, that's fascinating work. And I've had the opportunity to even meet some of the doctors working on some of these other researchers, which is always a very humbling experience. You realize the level.
So young.
But young and yet some of the achievements they've had and yet how humble they are. So it makes you really feel unaccomplished next to some of them.
Tell me about it, Gary.
So it's a good motivation for anyone that wants to have further ambition in life. Go sit down with some of these researchers and it'll make you realize there's a lot of hard work you still have to do. But I don't think anyone questions the value of the work and the importance of it, because to your point, those are significant statistics. Was it 43% of Canadians will be diagnosed?
That's right.
That's even higher than I thought, because I thought it was 1 in 3, more or less, and that's even higher. So what can people do to help? Because there may be ways to donate, there may be opportunities to contribute with some of the events, et cetera. But you would know, you'd be in the best position to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, first I'll say to people, just with respect to your own health, and especially maybe for any younger listeners, because the generation with the fastest rising cancer rates are actually millennials and young people. And depending on their family history, they may not have access to cancer screening, depending also on their age. So my first message would be is if you are experiencing any symptoms that are unusual for you, please try to get to a doctor and get them checked out. There is a very rapid rise in new cancer cases among millennials around the world. And we don't know what kind of cancer she has, but I think the Princess of Wales is a bit of a model in that regard. A millennial, we assume a non-smoker and probably otherwise quite fit and healthy. And that is what we are seeing in a growing number of young people. In terms of how to help support the research, what happens in the world of hospitals in Ontario and across the country is core cancer services are supported by the government. But a lot of research is supported actually by philanthropy. It's supported by people who are willing to make donations, whether that's $20 or $200 or whatever amount is right for you. And so there are a number of ways to do that. If you want to support world-leading research at the Princess Margaret, you can buy a lottery ticket at princessmargaretlotto.com, or you can go to our website, you can join an event, you can sign up for lawsuits and walk the runway. So there's just lots of ways to participate. And the ways to participate are often really fun. And almost all of us know someone who's experienced cancer. And unfortunately, many of us will go through cancer ourselves. So having a community around you when you have cancer or around someone you love who has cancer is also really important. So the great thing about the Princess Margaret is when you support us at an event, you often have an opportunity to walk with your doc, as we say, and interact directly with your oncology team, but also meet an entire community who understands what it's like to deal with cancer.
And having witnessed that, Mia, it's very fascinating and it's inspiring. It also motivates you to say, hey, this is very important. It's actually people that have had their lives affected by cancer through people they know, et cetera. They know what this could be like. And for many that don't, you can only imagine, because it's typically only 1 degree of separation. Even if you didn't have immediately somebody, you definitely know somebody that has. So it's a great cause and a great opportunity to contribute to it.
Thank you.
Mio, I'm going to pivot to something a little bit on the advice for business leaders, et cetera. But I'll start with a little bit with challenges, because any business faces challenges, and certainly not-for-profits, because you are so often so dependent on this third-party fundraising, to your point, that is driven by when the economy gets affected, it's sometimes disproportionately affecting not-for-profits because it's, you know, what gets cut first, it's often some of the, unfortunately, some of the donations, et cetera. So what's that been like sort of over the years? Like, what are some of the challenges you've encountered, and how should organizations think of, you may be going through some challenges, but it's important to stick to some of the causes that matter.
Yeah, I mean, we're so appreciative of our supporters, including our volunteers. There are many ways to support. It's not always financial, but certainly the economy does have an impact on people's ability to give. And as we know, it's a very challenging and uncertain economy that unfortunately probably shows no signs of improving in terms of certainty, at least not in the near term. So it definitely is a challenge. I think one of the challenges we have specifically in cancer sometimes is helping people understand that there has been real progress against cancer, and it's not a death sentence. A diagnosis can be very scary. Treatment can be very difficult. We're working hard and working fast to take a lot of that fear out of a diagnosis, but it's not like cancer was even 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And as a global cancer community, we really have made progress and now actually have an opportunity to turn cancer into a chronically managed disease rather than this hideous disease that everyone fears. But I think there's still a bit of a narrative out there that if I give to cancer, perhaps, I don't know what difference it makes. And every dollar we say at the Princess Margaret accelerates research and lights the path forward. And more people are fortunately surviving their cancer. And then specifically on the economy, I think all charities and all businesses are used to ups and downs. And, you know, I found if we continue to stay really focused and really positive, our supporters, fortunately, are very loyal and they understand the seriousness of cancer. So we've been very fortunate in our 40-year history to have made it through a number of economic crises and difficult times. So I just want to give a shout out to all cancer supporters and supporters of the Princess Margaret Cancer Foundation and to everyone who's giving to charity. There are just so many worthy causes out there.
And Mia's such a, that really resonates with me. Let's turn into a chronically managed disease versus something that is, or condition versus something that feels like a death sentence. And I think that would be a real achievement. Mm-hmm. Well, within our lifetimes, which is what's the beauty of it, is that this is not the type of thing we're talking about generations from.
Exactly. It is so exciting. I mean, if Terry Fox were alive today and diagnosed with his osteosarcoma, not only would he would survive with both his legs. And he might still deal with recurrences of cancer. Sarcoma is a tough cancer, but he would survive. And he would, as I say, have both his legs. And the idea that you can survive your cancer, you can thrive with cancer. We have a whole survive program at the Princess Margaret, which has grown. And of course, it's grown because more people are surviving cancer. And that's really what it's about. We're not sure we can totally eliminate cancer, but we know we can catch it much earlier at stage zero. And if it's caught later, we really want to help you survive it and thrive after.
Mia, it's exciting to hear all of this. And I know that it'll resonate with a lot of our audience because it is encouraging, right, to know how quickly things are moving. I'll pivot a little bit, Mia, to some of the business advice, because like I said, sort of at the beginning of the episode, is that a lot of what we learn applies just the same, regardless whether it's not-for-profit or otherwise. So this is anything from team buy-in to going through challenges, et cetera. So thinking of team buy-in, I mean, the work that the foundation does is fantastic, and it's so well known, not just within the GTA, but throughout Canada in general. So what have been some of your key learnings that in terms of getting team buy-in and get the type of support that you've managed to do over the years?
Yeah, it's so critical for whatever field you're in and whatever you're doing, because we know that no one accomplishes great things alone. You really do need a team. And in the case of the Princess Margaret, we consider our team our clinical and research colleagues at Princess Margaret Cancer Center and really across University Health Network, but also with other global cancer centers. So we apply the concept of team very broadly. I've always found that teams buy in when there's a really exciting, bold vision that the team is all behind. Sometimes that's almost a bit more straightforward in the not-for-profit world, whether it's creating a world free from the fear of cancer, ending poverty in the GTA, or whatever the cause is. In the corporate world, that can sometimes be a little bit more challenging, but corporations do so much for the not-for-profit world, and they have their own exciting missions, which I've always loved too. But I think so much of team buy-in is rallying around a mission, and then it's a deep understanding of why individuals have bought in and what they can contribute uniquely, because I believe we all have something to contribute. We all have very unique gifts. So it's making space for all of the voices. And when you're dealing with something like cancer, which affects people of all ages, genders, races, backgrounds, I find you really need to be inclusive.
Very much so. And Mia, it is, you know, one of the other areas that really comes to mind when I think of the leadership advice I want to ask you about is there's inevitably challenges you come across. So we talked a little bit about how it can be economic challenges, et cetera, having to hit certain budgets, having to hit certain goals, and it requires a level of resilience. And I think you embody that and you've done really well with that personally. So what tips do you have around that for executives around resilience and around, you know, how to get through some of the challenges that can be unpredictable, often beyond your control, but you still have to deal with the outcomes?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've learned, and I love seeing it in action every day in the world of scientists working in laboratories, is people become very comfortable saying, I don't know, or I'm not sure, or here's my hypothesis. And sometimes in the work world, we don't reward people for taking bold guesses or coming up with an alternative theory. We prize knowledge, particularly specialized knowledge. And it's such a complex and interconnected world to be able to say, I don't know, I'm not sure, or let's expand the circle for who we're going to get advice from is, I think, both motivating, but also really critical to solving different problems. So that's, you know, that's one challenge I've had to overcome early in my career, particularly early on as a consultant, where you're usually paid for your advice and you're expected to know. You know, you learn very early on that your clients often know. You can offer a different perspective. You can bring many perspectives together, but like together you solve the problem versus just saying, you know, here's the answer to your problem.
Very much so. Well, and it's interesting, Mio, because it's that process of discovery, and I had never thought of it to compare it to scientists, but by definition, they can have, you know, they can use the knowledge that they've accumulated historically to try to figure out what could be a likely answer. But until you experiment and try to find out, you don't actually know the answer.
Yes, exactly.
And inevitably, sometimes you have to do a variety of them before you could get to an answer that's worthwhile, unless you get lucky early on. But the you have to be prepared for that level for resilience that it can take a lot of effort to get to certain results.
So true. It's so true. Some of our scientists, they've, you know, worked on a particular aspect of a problem their entire career, and they've just been so dedicated. And our view is we learn something even if we don't learn what we expected to find. And that's just hugely helpful in the world of cancer. But I think it's also probably helpful more broadly.
Well, and it's to your point, we actually roll out things that, okay, well, we know it's not this, or it's not this entire path. And I think in the business world, and much like you said with consultants, it's not dissimilar. No one person seldom would have the answers in one shot. It's about the process of discovery and saying, can we accumulate that knowledge now into an answer versus let me come and give you the answers.
Yeah.
And Mio, I will move to a portion of our podcast that we call the rapid fire questions. So these are sort of something that comes to mind. It's supposed to be relatively straightforward. But before I go to that, I will ask you one thing and say, what was one question or one thing that you're like, I wish Gary had asked me this because I wanted to talk a little bit about this, and could be even a piece of advice for the leadership, for executive leaders out there in terms of based on your learnings and one thing. It's like, yeah, I'd like to share this. It's been an important learning in my life. So I'll leave that thought with you so you have an opportunity to think about it while I do the rapid fire questions.
Good.
And you may say, Gary, you gave me rapid fire questions. When was I going to think about it?
And you're a good interviewer. I'm trying to think, is there anything you haven't asked that I was hoping you would ask? I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but maybe I'll think of something.
But it could be a piece of advice for business leaders out there that has resonated with you. So
okay,
that's
perfect.
That's a bit broader.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So our first rapid fire question, how many languages do you speak?
I speak 3, English, French, and Japanese.
That's excellent. I'll have to practice a little bit of my very, very, very limited Japanese with you.
Perfect.
What word do you hate, if any?
Can't.
And certainly it's not an acceptable word in cancer research. We always can.
Well, our view at the Princess Margaret is we unfortunately can't save everyone's lives from cancer right now, but we can often extend someone's life and we can always improve a patient's quality of life. Wow. We really don't use the word can't. And cancer needs to be more hopeful.
Very, very, very powerful. What words do you have a hard time pronouncing, if any?
My gosh, that's a good question. I don't know if there are particular words, but in the Japanese language, and you would know this, Gary, if you elongate certain syllables, the word takes on a different meaning. And I sometimes forget that. And as a result, I say the wrong word and I can tell by people's reactions that, oh, that syllable should have been shorter or longer.
And a lot of sort of the East Asian languages, you know, that intonation even could change the meaning. So that matters so much. What is your favorite word in any language?
It's actually love. I think love, which is probably an underused word in the workplace.
Very much.
You know, we all know what love feels like. We all know what we feel if we love what we're doing, if we're passionate about what we're doing. And I feel that's just such a critical word for humanity, but it has applications to our work.
Absolutely. Very much so. And if we're motivated by love, we tend to do better things in life. So, and my last rapid fire question, Mio, what's one word to describe yourself by?
Positive.
I don't think anyone questions that. Anyone that meets you sort of within probably, I would say a fraction of a second, but maybe 5 seconds would describe you as such.
Thank you.
So I know I didn't allow you enough time to really think through my original question around whether it's one thing I wished I asked you or a piece of advice that you'd share with some executive leaders, but I thought it may be a good opportunity to come back to you with that. And then I had so many questions for you today, Mio, that I knew that I wasn't going to get to. So we may just have to do a part 2 of this episode, but in the meantime, I thought that may be a good way to really end it for today based on something that you would like to share.
So maybe I'll share the observation, because I've worked in so many different sectors and industries, that I often work with people who have dedicated their career to a specific industry, which is so lovely to see. But sometimes you get a bit of the grass is always greener syndrome. So for example, when I was in the startup world, a lot of the startups I would talk with would want to be like big companies. And I'd come from big companies and a lot of them wanted to be like startups. Larger companies seem to admire the perception of an entrepreneurial mindset and innovation and fast pace of execution in the startup world. And the startups seem to really want to scale very quickly. Of course, they admire the revenue, the capital base, these big companies, the power of their brands, when I was in consulting, people often said, oh, it must be great to be on the client side. And in the consulting world, it's more of an eat what you kill world, if you will. And then I'd be on the client side and the industry side. And people would say, oh, these consultants, you know, they just come in, but they don't really have to own the problem. So there's a bit of sometimes the grass is always greener. And what I've really learned through that is, yes, sometimes the grass does appear greener, but no matter where you are, no matter what size organization you're in or the industry that you're in, there's great opportunities usually, and there's also challenges. And you got to try to seize the opportunities and not worry too much about how green something is somewhere else and just stay really focused with you and your team about what you want to achieve. But I've just found that so interesting over the course of my career, the different perceptions of other organizations or industries.
And Mio, it's such a great piece of advice because to your point, there's no bigger thief of happiness than to be like, oh, I wish I was in this situation. And
well said, Gary. That's so true.
You know, and having that gratitude to be like, hey, being in an entrepreneurial environment, we can execute so much faster, and sort of focusing on that versus like, I wish I had the resources that the bank has, you know. So, and I think that's such an important piece of advice because we have to be to make the most of the circumstances that we have versus wishing we were somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And much like cancer research, we have to make the best with what we have versus be like, I wish I had all the answers.
Well, and certainly in the public healthcare system as well, right?
Very much so.
We take patients. Our research is comparable with patient outcomes that are the same or better than some of the world's leading cancer centers. Some of the world's leading cancer centers are for-profit cancer centers, and that's fine. They're in a different model, but you have to be able to afford $2,000 a day cancer care. And as we know, that does not exist in Canada. And the great news is that people can all be seen, and we need to make sure that access is equitable across the country. But people can all be seen. And as a result, we have the most diverse patient population in the world on whom research is done, and not just in the field of cancer, but that benefits the entire country and the world. So we may not have the same amount of funding as some of the other for-profit cancer centers, but we've got other benefits which help everybody.
And that's why we should never think the grass is always greener on the other side.
Exactly.
Mio, it's been fantastic having you on the podcast today. It's been an excellent discussion, and I really appreciate some of your thoughts and some of your learnings that you shared with us. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Gary, thank you so much. I really appreciated the chance to speak with you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.